Hello and welcome to Paranormal is Normal. And this is Richard Allibone on webtalkradio.net. This week we'll be talking about the paranormal side of music being heard as a person is dying. This is no joke because it really does happen. It is heard by the sick person, and we know this by reports of people who have been resuscitated. But more than this, sometimes people nearby also hear the music. Some will hear it and some will not, which proves the point that there is nothing to hear. It is apparently the emotion of music which may be felt, not heard, but is perceived as real music being heard. My guest today has made a very complete study of this and has published it in an article. His name is Melvin Willin. He happens to live close to me, and I'm pleased to introduce him to you.
Hello.
Hello.
Ah, hello, Melvin. I always thought your interests were witchcraft and ghosts and so on, but clearly you've made a big study about music and death, which is what prompted me to call you today. I'm very intrigued about the whole business, but the main thing is the near-death experience, which from which people seem to hear music. Perhaps you could tell us about that.
Yes. Well, this comes on the back really of other work that I've done. My speciality has been music rather than ghosts and witchcraft over the last 30 odd years. And I thought, well, it's time to look at a part of the music and the paranormal exploration, which I haven't looked at before, notably the near-death experiences via music. So I thought I would delve into the literature and see what I could find, and then contact living people, easier to talk to than the dead, to actually find out what their experiences were. And that's what I've been doing on and off for the last couple of years.
But a lot of people get, of course, life-changing experiences from this near-death experience. Any comment on that?
Yes, they do. I think that makes the difference between somebody that's perhaps been pumped full of drugs and luckily for them has survived, rather than the person that's had what might or might not be a genuine near-death experience, because they do seem to change their lives quite dramatically. As opposed to just saying, you know, wow, aren't I lucky I'm still alive, so to speak.
This rings a bell with me because I've studied ecstatic enlightenment or mystical experience, and it's just the same there. You very often have a life-changing attitude, or it does change their lives completely. They say that a lot of the things you've spoken about, the music seems to come from within.
Well, that's the difficulty, isn't it? It's whether it comes from within or without. And I asked that question to quite a famous composer a few years ago, John Taverner, who did some of the music for Princess Di's funeral. And I said to him, does your music come from within you, or do you believe, or from some external source? Now, the meeting is an interesting one with John Taverner. He's about 6'6", so he's sort of like a giraffe standing next to him, and his sort of head comes down to communicate with you, and I'm 6'2". And he thought about it for a while, and then he leant down and said to me, well, I think it comes from an external source and not from within the human being that's either writing it or experiencing it. And that I found fascinating, because it means that he doesn't think it's just something that's buzzing around our brain cells, that it's something that's genuinely paranormal, or even, dare I use the word, supernatural.
And the ones that really get me are where another person hears the music, not the, the person that has the NDE, but a relative or the nurses or whatever that are around. Very often feel music.
Yeah. I mean, that's the best examples, really, because as soon as you've got something that can be verified, veridical evidence is the best sort, if you know what I mean. And if you've got somebody else in the room that is genuinely thinks that after the event they too heard it, not prompted by somebody saying, did you hear the music? And then they go, oh, yes, I did, since you mentioned it, sort of thing. If they've genuinely heard something themselves, then, well, unless it was just natural music coming from down the road or something, then we're stuck, aren't we?
The thought that comes to my mind is that it is a telepathic sort of experience, which either is received by the person having an NDE. They hear or feel music by from somewhere. By it could be a telepathic mechanism, and also it goes the other way, where somebody having an NDE and friends, family, whatever around hear music by telepathy from the person that is near death. Now, how do you feel about that?
Well, why not? Any that I consider to be sensible idea to explain one or more of these near-death experiences where music is available, I'm happy to listen to.
Another explanation that somebody came up with was a rupture in the ether. And I believe that particular person then said, well, if there was a rupture in ether, then it speaks well for spiritualism and the fact that...
The spiritualists that I've spoken to, I think virtually without exception, are more than happy to believe in the transcendental plane or the different ether or whatever word one wants to use to describe it. And they firmly take that on board.
Now, going on to one or two of the particular cases that you mentioned, in 1881, I believe it was, the SBR or somebody from the SBR published an article where music was heard by several people. And this was an interesting one, right back in the early days of the SBR.
Yes, well, the SBR, I think, was founded in 1882, but obviously they were doing things before that informally, before they called themselves the SBR.
Yeah, and but apparently people varied in what they heard or what they reported.
The Eton case, I think, is the one you're talking about, which was July 28th, 1881. And different people heard music who were present, but then other people that were there didn't hear the music.
Yeah. Yes. So that and they varied in what they heard. Some people said it was singing, and some others thought it was ordinary, orchestral music.
Yeah.
So people varied in what they heard. There again, you see, it points to the fact that the source of the music is just emotion, and it's interpreted by the individual in slightly different ways.
Absolutely, yes. And also, although most people, I suspect, can tell the difference between singing and between instruments, but as far as the effect it has upon them, you know, what is one person finds charming, somebody else would find hideous or boring. Classical music is a fine example. On the odd occasions I play a piece of classical music to teenage electric guitar playing pupils of mine, they hate it. And if I play heavy metal to some of my older adult students at full volume, they hate that as well. So each to their own.
Yeah.
And now, Melvin, at this point in my show, I have a break and discuss the topic as well as your comments. What we have seen so far is that there are definitely some strange things that happen around the time of death, which seemingly are not understood and are really even believed. My own belief is that all paranormal things have an explanation, and this music at death is not an exception. But there are two completely separate issues here. Firstly, the experience of a dying person which we only know about when he or she recovers, is often a feeling of being engulfed in beautiful music. In fact, this happens in 11% of near-death experience cases. The second issue is that of music being heard by people by the deathbed, which I'll discuss later. When someone's body is fighting for its life, the unconscious brain, quite understandably, goes into overdrive, where instinct and emotion are dominant. And we know that this condition leads to trance, which inhibits any conscious thoughts. We know that this is so because any deep trance will bring on this condition, be it from hypnosis or terror, which will bring on an enlightenment or mystical experience. This then appears to be what happens when a body is fighting for its life. Consciousness is flooded with emotion, turning to beautiful music, which seems to be an explanation for the memory of this music in the case of about 11% of people who recover from an NDE. This blissful and ecstatic state is not uncommon in ordinary life, and it has nothing to do with dying. I have personal experience of it and have written about it in the book Sublimity. So from this, we can see why a musical experience may well be spoken of by a person after an NDE. But not only is music reported, a change in outlook and lifestyle is generally the case, which is exactly the same as is found with people after a blissful or ecstatic enlightenment in ordinary everyday life. This similarity cannot be ignored and supports the explanation for music during an NDE. Melvin mentions several cases where, after recovery, the memory of the music causes people to try and write it down or to compose music as beautiful as that memory. Music is all about emotion, which comes from the unconscious brain, and that's why we all have some understanding and appreciation of music. This then brings us to the cases where other people hear the music at the same time as the dying person. They don't actually hear it, but feel the emotion, which is interpreted as wonderful music, suitable for the emotion of the occasion. As the music is felt rather than heard, descriptions may vary, and some may hear nothing. But this has been experienced many times, and the literature of the topic is very considerable. Melvin quoted 46 references in his recent article, and as these experiences are not often talked about, the truthfulness of the reports should not be doubted. These experiences are not the sort of thing people would make up, although the skeptics would say there is not a shred of evidence. But in the same way that the carrier of telepathy shares growth information between members of a species, so our brains are formed in the mould of our species, complete with operating system and a complete range of instincts and emotions. These are what Jung referred to as our archetypes, and of course include our fundamental appreciation of music. I believe that this basic shared feeling for music is what composers are talking about when they say that the music comes from somewhere outside their mind. Similarly, the emotion of dying and its music is sometimes shared with the people present at a death. These rather morbid ideas do accord with the evidence surrounding near-death experiences, and I hope you don't think that I have turned an interesting investigation into something unnecessarily morbid. As you're aware, my interest in the paranormal centres around trance and telepathy, and today's topic I find interesting because trance and telepathy offer explanation for what would normally be considered quite paranormal. So now it's time to come back to you, Melvin, for more ideas about near-death experiences.
Now, another case, the case of John Britton. He was close to dying, and two people heard music. There again, you see, and there was actually no sounds there, I believe, but it was...
Yes, I mean, that's a difficult one, really, because, he said it was most beautiful music. That doesn't help at all. But it was also quoted as being, it resembled, and I'm quoting here, the full notes of an organ or an Aeolian harp. Now, the full notes of an organ, think of your Royal Albert Hall thundering away. And then the Aeolian harp is the strings that are played in a harp-like manner, often by the wind, hence its name Aeolian, a completely different sound. And it couldn't be one and the other. It had to be one or the other.
Mm. So that was the interpretation put on the music in inverted commas, by the two different people. One saw it as organ music, and the other as the harp music.
Well, there were two people here. One thought it was singing, and the other one felt it was either an organ or an Aeolian harp. I mean, the same person thought it could be one or the other, and I don't see how they confuse those two.
Yes.
There's always controversy over these descriptions, especially when you're going back 150-odd years in the process.
Yes. Yeah, some of them, of course, are very old, but there are modern ones. Yeah.
The one that I've found the most fascinating of all of them is the most modern one. And the whole business behind this was remarkable. It's one of those lovely, what some people would call a coincidence, and I think, well, was it a coincidence or not? And that was a case of, it started life as just a normal event. One of my students was playing the Rodrigo Guitar Concerto in a semi-professional concert, and he said to me, would I go to the rehearsal, the final rehearsal, just so I could check the sound balance and that sort of thing. So I turned up, and there was a chap there who I'd never met before, who was also standing around waiting for his bit, so to speak. And I said, oh, hello, what are you doing here? And he said, well, I've just composed a piece of music, and in the second half of the concert, it's the first performance of my piece. I said, oh, yes, good luck. And he said, yes. He said, it's very strange. He said, because I had a near-death experience and wrote a piece of music about it.
Yes.
I mean, this could have floored me, because I just started work on doing exactly that sort of research. So an amazing coincidence. And then, of course, I interviewed him, listened to his music, and so on.
Yes, I think you said it was a very moving piece of music, which has been used for meditation classes.
Yes, it has. I mean, it's in classical terms, it's sort of Vaughan Williams stroke Samuel Barber Adagio for strings type music. And it is very contemplative and, it's a pleasing sound, shall we say, which he wrote. Mm. Well, he after his near-death experience, which was a very unpleasant one, he got dragged under a train. He had a visual experience. He didn't actually hear music then. He had a visual experience, but part of that visual experience, he was told to write music to describe, what he was feeling in the state that he was in during his near-death experience.
Mm.
And before that, all he'd written musically were pop jingles, just for fun, on an electric keyboard.
Mm. Yes, and I believe there's quite a lot of cases where people had some sort of a bad experience which caused them to write, to want to write, or sometimes it was an NDE. A fellow was struck by lightning, I believe, in New York the US somewhere.
Yeah, now, Tony Scicoria. Yes, he's fascinating. It's he had this sort of insatiable desire to play piano music, which came to him in his dreams. I've heard there is a CD available of this, and I've heard his music, and it's very interesting. I mean, it's not outstandingly different classical music to what one would hear sort of in the normal classical world, but nevertheless, the circumstances in which he wrote it are remarkable.
Mm. Yes, I suppose one can't really say that sort of experience is paranormal, but at the same time, there's quite a few cases where people have had a strong experience, and this has led them to write music or to finish a composition which they'd already started or something like that.
Yes, I mean, music is a very strange business. Of the arts, I've always believed that it's the most intangible because you haven't really got anything to grab hold of. With a painting, you can keep looking at it. And with a sculpture, you can look at it and feel it and so on. And with music, you hear it and then it's gone unless you keep it in your head. So therefore, you have to keep going back to it to sort of experience it again. And why people get music in their heads at different times, one doesn't know it. Everybody is affected by music of some sort or the other, whether it's, as I said earlier, whether it's classical music or heavy metal.
So anyway, your work on this has been very complete in the article you wrote in Paranormal Review, which was out fairly recently. Mm-hmm. Have you written anywhere else about music and death?
It sort of goes through. I wrote a book a few years ago called Music, Witchcraft and the Paranormal. And that consists basically of six essays covering different aspects of paranormal music. One, for instance, within the witchcraft scenario, but another one from medium spiritualistic viewpoint. And that's the one that has sort of some of the Scott Rogo near-death studies in it. And basically that book was my two PhDs in the subject, reduced considerably because PhDs are horribly long. To turn it into a sort of book format, and that book's still available on Amazon and what have you.
Yes, do you have a website with anything on?
Yes, my website. I can never remember the name on it, but if you put in my name, Melvin Willin, and it will come up in front of you, and you can go in and read various articles and abstracts of stuff that's been published. In various sources, actually.
Yes. Oh, well. Okay. Well, thanks for all that. I found it very interesting, and I expect our listeners will as well. So with that, I'll thank you very much, and we have to say goodbye.
Okay, then. Thanks a lot, then.
Bye-bye.
Right. I find this a quite fascinating subject. Okay, somewhat morbid, but we all have to cope with the emotion of bereavement at some time, so it's interesting to hear what people experience occasionally at a death or near death. Soon after talking to Melvin, I realized that there was one question I should have asked him. In his article, there was no mention of the fairly common experience of a person being aware of the death of a family member when that person is somewhere away, being made aware by telepathy, of course. The example I like to quote is of Nikola Tesla, one of the world's greatest scientists, who was away lecturing when he became disturbed and ill, and then he learnt his mother was dying. That night, he said, after an emotional dream, it was in that instant of certitude, which no words could express, it came upon me that my mother had just died. And that was true. Anecdotal cases like that cannot be proved, but there are so many of them that scientific proof, I think, is unnecessary. But I digress. The question I should have asked Melvin was, have there been cases where a distant relative's death were noted at the same time by music being heard? So I rang him and asked about this, and he said yes, he had published details of the cases previously in his book Music, Witchcraft and the Paranormal. So I felt pleased I'd asked him if there had been cases where music had carried the message of death at a distance. And this, of course, is yet another example of the way that telepathy is an undeniable part of our lives. But it isn't any good just showing that it works without answering the questions how and why. Telepathy is carried by spinning particles that are largely unknown to science, which come from the interaction of gravity and inertia in rotating bodies, that is, they come from planets. This answers the question how something carries digital information from brain cell to brain cell across space, which I call cytotelesis. I accept that this is a new and way out extension to science, but it does fit all the facts. The answer to why telepathy works was discussed with Rupert Sheldrake, my guest, on another occasion. It's all to do with biological growth and the information which is carried within the species, which is fundamental to all life, where the information is coded and decoded by DNA and genes, and that again fits all the facts and is a perfectly logical new extension to science, answering many questions and anomalies, as well as the how and why of telepathy. If you want more detail, go to my website, www.sublimity.org.uk, that's sublimity.org.uk, or for more detail and background, see my book Sublimity. Our guest today has shown us that the known details of music heard at the time of death are common enough to have been written about for at least 130 years, and that they all fit into a pattern which appeared inexplicable. However, by realizing that trance and telepathy can reasonably explain all the experiences, they are no longer inexplicable. In fact, they would appear to be a normal part of the emotion associated with dying. Today we've seen that as a person approaches death, the brain goes into a state of panic, which initiates a deep trance state, being the same state as ecstatic enlightenment, which is well known, often producing a change in attitude and lifestyle in the person concerned. And this is what we see in the near-death experience, where the mind is overloaded by emotion which appears as music in memory. This music is generated by the reality simulator of the brain, which is the part of the brain that produces dreams. I'm aware that this all sounds rather technical, but it's all logical and reasonable. When it comes to explaining why people at the bedside hear music, it's the deep emotion of the situation producing a state of trance in those people, and they hear music in the same way as the person near death, with the trigger for music probably being carried by telepathy from the dying person. Where that person survives, the NDE, they invariably report experiences similar to ecstatic enlightenment, with a similar change in lifestyle. So, many thanks to my guest this week, Melvin Willin, whose website, incidentally, is www.hulford.co.uk/CV. That's Hulford, H-U-L-F-O-R-D, .co.uk/CV. For more background to my theories, see www.sublimity.org.uk. And that's enough for this week. It was a rather morbid subject, but it has helped to show that paranormal is normal. This is Richard Allibone signing off from webtalkradio.net. I hope this week has been interesting, though perhaps not enjoyable. Bye-bye.